26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin. Hit and drop to the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game, as a player or a coach, that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot. Drops it in to Chanel. Touchdown!
Welcome into episode 11 of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, and this week was a bit more of a heartbreaker than the last 2 weeks that we. I honestly I thought we had it all the way out of the end. As always, going to get to that one after we go through the Pac-12. And so, starting it off, Chase, you got to see most of the Stanford Arizona game. How did that one go down?
So this was interesting because KJ Costello came back for Stanford. So it's kind of a new, it's just a completely different team. Stanford has been like a different team every week, it seems like. But he came back and it proved to be a big deal because that one turned into a shootout quick. It was 41-31 Stanford. And I mean, he played very well. And there were a lot of some circus catches in this game, a couple of one-handed catches. There's at least one where Stanford wide receiver just straight up mossed Arizona defensive back in the end zone. So, it was a good game. Stanford's defense still questionable. It's definitely a different way for them to win than what they're used to. Arizona was kind of ultimately undone by just Khalil Tate being a bit shaky. He still, for as much as he's talented, he still makes a lot of stupid decisions, and that definitely costs. Cost the team in the long run. So it hurt him for this game, and that kind of made the difference in the end when it ended 41-31. That was pretty much it. I mean, Grant Gunnell came in for parts of the game. They were doing some weird stuff where it looked like they were just trying to throw Stanford for a loop. But it was close for most of the game, and Stanford just kind of pulled away at the end. And I think KJ Costello was the main difference there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I honestly, maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but I had no idea he was going to be back this week. And it seems like just from seeing the highlights and the box score, he seems pretty healthy. I mean, obviously, he was out with what, like a concussion, or no, it was something more than that, right?
Yeah, it was something more than that. I don't remember exactly what. I think Davis Mills was the one who went down with a concussion at one point in the year, but. Yeah, so he's back, but I think the reason why we didn't hear anything about it is because Stanford was keeping it pretty close to the vest. They kind of wanted Arizona to have to guess on that one, so it seemed like it worked out for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stanford with Costello or Mills is kind of like a run of the in the middle pack of the Pac-12, but then
right.
If it gets down to Jack West, they are like. Probably the worst team.
Hard bottom. Yeah, they yeah. can't, like, he can't move the ball. So he's not ready to play quarterback in the Pac-12 yet. So
I don't know if he's ever going to be from what I've seen.
Yeah, it was bad there. But
okay. Yeah, so that was an interesting one. Arizona is kind of similar to us in the fact that they kind of just live and die by their quarterback. And if he's off, they're off.
Yes.
So that one, again, the South just kind of showing that it's kind of the most inconsistent division probably in college football.
And, definitely one of them.
And right here kind of illustrates that perfectly with UCLA somehow just like completely tore Arizona State apart. And you kind of wrote down here in the notes, it was 42-32, but it really wasn't that close. I mean, at one point I remember it, like they had like a comfortable like 21-point lead.
I think it was 42-10.
Was it even worse than that?
When they scored 42, I think it was 42-10. And yeah, I mean, they kicked the shit out of them pretty much.
But even when you look at the box score, like DTR didn't even have like incredible stats. Were they just getting short fields or like what was the deal here?
So we'll talk about this more when we talk about UCLA. But honestly, if you watch that game, DTR, Dorian Thompson Robinson, the quarterback for UCLA, was pretty much running for his life for a lot of that game. I mean, he really was. Like, at least one of his touchdown throws was off his back foot with two guys in his face, but he just had a man wide open in the end zone. So ASU was getting a lot of pressure, and they just couldn't get to him. They couldn't bring him down, it seemed like, and he was pretty much saving them. That and Kelly, their running back, scoring four touchdowns and running all over him pretty much. He had a really solid game, but their whole offense was definitely predicated on DTR's ability to run and to be aggressive in the running game. Because you're right, his passing numbers honestly weren't that impressive, but he was just very mobile, very elusive for them, and I think that was giving ASU some problems. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on for the CU game, because he did get hurt at the very end, which is crazy that he was even in the game when they were up by 42-10 or 42-17 or whatever it was at that point. But he escaped on another pass play that didn't work out. He escaped, got tackled, looked like he got hit in the leg. He had to get helped off the field. So I don't know if he'll even be playing. And if he does play, his mobility is probably going to be questionable. So that'll be interesting to see how it changes that offense. But yeah, they ran a ton of read option plays, and ASU just couldn't deal with it because Dorian Thompson Robinson just kept getting away from him all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what they have after him, but he just still seems mediocre, even though they beat ASU here. And, The one thing that's nice, I think, about this year's team, one of the few bright spots, is they haven't really been taken advantage of by a mobile quarterback. Granted, I think they've only played two actually mobile quarterbacks, but for the most part, they've held them in check.
Yeah, they've done fine. I mean, with Tate, I think it was he didn't run because he didn't have to. So I'm not as sure about that one, but they did pretty well keeping Jaden Daniels from escaping and running all over them when they played ASU. So it'll be interesting to see. Their backup is Austin Burton. He did start one game for them earlier in the year against Oregon State, and they lost. But I think it was because they gave up a ton of points. But I seem to remember Oregon State being in control of that one. And for the record, their last two drives were a punt and a fumble. So with him in there. So it's not the same team without Dorian Thompson Robinson, which is interesting because, yeah, I mean, he's had his ups and downs throughout this year for sure. But he's honestly the only reason why they were able to put up so many points in that game, just because even though, I mean, I'm talking like there were plays where there were three ASU linemen or linebackers that were running in after him, and he just pulled some magic out of nowhere and escaped. There's one play in particular, a fourth down. He snapped the ball, and I think it was half a second. There were two or three guys in the backfield, and he just ran around them, ran backwards about 10 yards, and then started going forwards and ran around them and converted the fourth down. So, and ended up scoring a touchdown. I think that was the biggest issue all day, so it'll be interesting to see how they move forward with him either injured or just not the same.
Okay, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, I was just checking the score at one point, and I thought that I didn't realize it was as bad as 42-10. But yeah, I mean, well, it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious if maybe ASU just like wasn't really up for that game. Do they have like somebody coming up maybe as a look ahead?
I'm not sure about the rest of their schedule, but I could see definitely how they would overlook UCLA. And, you know, UCLA has done some weird stuff this year. I mean, they did beat Washington State in one of the craziest shootouts I've ever seen. So, you know, it's not the first time that they've come up and surprised someone. But it looks like, I mean, Arizona State does have USC coming up, but they're going into a bye. So they should have been fine. I don't know. But just got surprised a little bit. Honestly, it seemed like they were just a little shell-shocked with how the game started. They started slow and you know, I can imagine that not expecting UCLA to put up too much of a fight, getting down early like that probably wasn't great for them.
Yeah. So that one, that kind of, you know, covers UCLA and ASU. The next game was, I actually watched part of this one before it got too boring to even continue to watch. Utah just dominated Cal. I know Huntley was actually hurt, something with his leg. Earlier in the week, and he's kind of a little hobbled, but I mean, he still came out and played, and he just kind of did what he's been doing all year, just consistent, doing enough to get the offense rolling. And obviously with Zach Moss, their running back, they kind of had their way with Cal's defense, which is not something anybody's been able to do really for the past 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, Cal has no offense, and I think it's just beginning to show up on the scoreboard a lot more. I mean, when your offense can't move the ball at all, and I mean at all, they had 83 total yards of offense in this entire game. So, I mean, it was bad for them, and I just think that no defense, no matter how good you are, is going to be able to overcome that kind of production or lack thereof from your offense. So, yeah, I mean, Huntley looked good despite kind of limping around the field. And once they had a decent lead, I think the backup, Shelley, was that his name, came in?
Yeah, Shelley, the same guy that he played for, came in for last year after
Right.
went down.
Right, he came in and he played well too. So they seem to be doing just fine.
Yeah, I mean, One thing I saw when I was just kind of reading some of the reviews of this game, this is a really interesting stat that, I mean, I think everyone knew Utah's defense was pretty stout, but I didn't realize that they had only allowed 10 points in the last 14 quarters of football. So yeah, the last 3.5 games, 10 points, and the only touchdown was Oregon State when it was like a garbage time touchdown.
Yeah, pretty unbelievable stuff. I mean, they seem to really be hitting a groove. It seems like ever since they lost that game to USC, the surprising one, they've really just stepped up their game, honestly, on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, Utah, I think, is going to give. At this point, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion. Utah is probably going to be in the, well, then again, though, USC has the head-to-head on them.
Right, that could be the killer for them, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but I just feel like USC is going to lose. Again, I mean, USC is going to go to, they've got somebody, I think, left in the schedule, like maybe Oregon?
Yes, they have Oregon next weekend.
Yeah, they'll lose again, and I don't think Utah's going to lose to anybody in the South or anything like that, so I would assume they're going to be in the championship against the next game's team, which was Oregon, and they actually had a battle with Washington State, which was really surprising to me. I thought that Washington State just kind of took advantage of the CU defense, but it seems like they've sort of righted the ship. They're kind of in a free fall there for a bit on a 3-game losing streak, and then after the game against us, they seemed to have figured some stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were a definite confidence builder for them, maybe, which makes sense. I mean, we really got our asses kicked in that one, but They hung in with Oregon on this game. I mean, the thing that ended up killing them was kind of what we saw from CU, and I think what a lot of teams have seen against Washington State is you can just run all over them. I believe it's the Oregon running back, Verdell. Mm-hmm. He had 257 yards and 3 touchdowns. So, I mean, he crushed them. That was pretty much the decider there. But it was a close game. Oregon only won on a last second field goal, but they lived to fight another day, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Oregon always is, I mean, they've been flirting with close games this entire season, aside from ours. And they usually drop one of these every year.
Right, right.
And so I'm just kind of waiting for it to happen. But I mean, if they don't, and this is kind of getting to the next point, Oregon and Utah right now still have, I mean, they're keeping the Pac-12 playoff hopes. They're almost reinvigorated after Oklahoma lost.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of the big story of the week for the Pac-12 is between, Oregon and Utah, they actually have a reasonable chance. I mean, a non-zero chance. It's still not super likely, but yeah. So if you look at Oregon, Oregon's number 7 now, so that's pretty solid. That's pretty high. And if you look at the teams above them, you've got LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Penn State, and Florida. And all those teams still have big games left on their schedule that they could definitely lose. I mean, between LSU and Alabama, they're going to play each other.
Yep.
Florida is going to have to play one of LSU and Alabama. So,
and Georgia this week.
And Georgia this week, so there's potential there. Clemson's probably not going to lose. Ohio State and Penn State play each other, so there's a lot of games there where someone is going to lose. So Oregon could theoretically climb up the rankings a bit here. And you know, the best case scenario for them is USC drops another game, Utah wins out, and then you've got a top 10 matchup in the Pac-12 championship game that one of them can win, and maybe they can sneak into the playoff that way.
Yeah, and I think the big kicker here, I think Clemson's pretty much a lock unless they somehow slip up. And even then, I think they've been so dominant the past like 4 weeks that even a one-loss Clemson, albeit in the terrible ACC, is still going to get the benefit of the doubt. Ohio State or Penn State, really, whoever wins out is going to get that spot. And then someone from the SEC, it's really just at this point, I think, between the Big 12 and the Pac-12. And the only reason I think the Pac-12 has an advantage here is Baylor is not going to finish the season undefeated.
Doubt it.
They're just not going to do it. If anything, I feel like they're going to have two losses. So really the Big 12 championship is probably going to be, if Oklahoma wins out, them versus a two-loss team.
Yeah.
And I think a top 10 matchup Pac-12 with the winner coming through is going to look better on a resume, even if they, you know, the narrative says the Pac-12 is weak. But I think that the Pac-12 has got a legitimate shot if they can both win out through the conference championship. But with the Pac-12, you never really know.
Yeah, and you know, that would be pretty sweet, not going to lie.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Be a nice payout for everybody if they made it to the college football playoff. I think it's like, what, 100,000 per school? It's probably way more than that, actually. But they get a couple million per school. I don't know where the 100,000 came out of. But I think each school gets like a couple million if they make it to the playoff. So that would be cool.
All right. Well, sweet.
Yeah. So on to, kind of like I said at the beginning, this one was one of the harder losses I think I've watched in quite a while, honestly, just because it was like for pretty much the entire game, I was relatively confident that CU was going to win. And even though we'll get to the defense in a bit, the defense actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was initially, but man, that was a tough one to watch.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, on one hand, you're looking at it disappointed when I went into this game thinking we were going to get absolutely obliterated. So, you know, there's that. I mean, they definitely showed some fight like we talked about, which I was definitely happy about. It's tough when you're up 10 points in the final quarter of the game and you've been moving the ball and it just feels like they're going to pull it out. And then they just couldn't quite finish the game off. But, you know, I felt good that they were in it for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that the offense stalled really pretty much right after that. Like, I mean, let's just be honest, it was bullshit that it wasn't called roughing the passer when Montez got hit. And the offense kind of stalled after that. I mean, I know Stenstrom came in for like a couple, like a 20-yard scramble or something, which is cool to see. But after that, the offense really didn't do anything. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the staff was really, I don't think they were like going to put him in like danger with his like health or anything like that. But I think something just seemed a little off with him after he took that hit and came back into the game.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely got his bell rung. There was no doubt about that. If you just watch the play, you could see his head kind of got whiplashed into the ground. It was very unfortunate. I mean, that play really decides the game in a way, because yeah, he didn't seem quite the same after that, or at least it took him a little bit to kind of get it back together. And you know, that's a 15-yard penalty and a first down on what became 4th and 14. So that's tough. That's tough to think about, but you know, we got to try not to think about the officiating, I guess. I think the frustrating thing about it was it kind of felt like they didn't need, like, after that, I appreciated that they still wanted to be aggressive. They still wanted to do what they can do with their offense, but in that situation, I almost would rather them just keep the ball on the ground for most of it. I feel like they could have run out some more clock there, maybe pass in a few specific situations, but they took a couple of deep shots that Montez clearly was still a little bit off for and mm-hmm. didn't really come super close. So I wish that had been different, but you know, I mean, credit to Montez. He came back in, he battled. I mean, he scored a 17-yard touchdown run. I mean, that was one of the biggest things in the whole game, I think, and what might be the deciding factor for how they do next week was he was running like we hadn't seen him run really all year. I don't know what you thought about that.
Yeah, no, that was interesting to see. I mean, I've just become so accustomed to him running that zone read and it's not really a read because he gives it off every time.
Right, right.
That when he kept it on that touchdown, I was like I was not looking at him at all. I was watching, I think it was Fontenot that was in for that play. I was watching Fontenot, and then when I finally realized Montez had the ball still, he was basically already in the end zone. So it was cool to see that part of the offense kind of come to life, and I think that's really what Jay Johnson wants to do with his offense. But I don't think Montez is, you know, quick enough or fast enough to actually do it that effectively. I mean, obviously it worked here, but I think it worked so well because USC probably wasn't expecting it either.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I almost felt like when I was watching the game, especially in the beginning, it kind of seemed like maybe the coaching staff, because I know there had been some talk about the coaching staff telling Montez absolutely under no circumstances should you take hits, be as careful as you possibly can. And to me, it kind of almost felt like they were just saying, you know what, forget it. Do whatever it takes to win the game. You know, run the ball aggressively, try to find that balance. And it was good, I think, for him, because in the beginning, I think his first throw, he like hit LaVisca in the feet. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to be a long game. And then it almost felt like him running with it a bit, maybe scrambling a little more, improvising a little more. It kind of seemed like it made him a little bit more aggressive and a little more comfortable. So, you know, I honestly, it kind of seemed like it helped him throughout the rest of the game, and maybe it'll help him turn the corner for the rest of the season. So I hope he's okay. I haven't heard anything about him up to this point. I don't know if you have about his status after that game, but I hope he's good to go for this next week.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard anything about him, but I just remember watching the post game presser. I mean, he was in it, so obviously he was like well enough to go talk in that. And I mean, they asked him about the play. He said he didn't really remember the play that much because it rung his bell, but he said right. that he felt fine, that he passed the concussion protocol or anything. So I would be surprised if he doesn't walk out there at UCLA next week. But the cool thing about it, you know, is that it's stuff like this that gets me excited to see what a Brendan Lewis or a truly dual threat quarterback yes, can do yes. in this kind of offense.
Exactly. Because
I think that's a big part of what Jay Johnson likes to do, and he just hasn't either he hasn't felt comfortable or he hasn't wanted to do something like this. And so seeing it for this game gets me really excited for next year with a more mobile quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, I felt like Jay Johnson kind of had a good game. I mean, yes, like we talked about already a little bit, I would have liked him to be a little more conservative towards the end with the run plays in overall play calling standards, not necessarily in some of the other decisions at the end of the game, which we'll touch on in a second. But I thought he had a solid game, really. I mean, they were able to move the ball on USC most of the night. It seemed like it was going pretty well, and I'm with you. It kind of made me excited for next year because it seemed like having that mobility at the quarterback position kind of opened him up a little bit. It kind of they played a little bit looser, and it gives me hope that their offense is still going to survive a quarterback transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big thing here is that we were at least able to get back on track. I mean, we obviously scored 31 points, which is a hell of a lot better than the six combined we had in the last two games. So anytime the offense can kind of get rolling, I'm all for it. Yes. I think you were kind of alluding to it earlier. The thing that really bothered me, and it happened twice. Granted, one of them, it was like fourth and long.
I think it's, 14.
Two times we were on the USC 37 and both times we punted. I guess I don't understand why you don't even give Stefano a shot there. I mean, if he misses, then they still have a 60-yard field. I was confused as why you don't let him give that kick a shot. It's not like it was windy.
Yeah, so actually I looked up some stuff for this, did a little research. You know, that's my commitment to the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast. So actually, because I had the same thought that you did, and I think a lot of other people out there did, like, why not give Stefano a shot at both of those kicks? In my mind, I thought, especially the fourth and 16 or fourth and 14, whatever it was, because, yeah, maybe you don't want to go for that one because your chances of converting it are so small. But if you kick it, you know, then you're up 13. And that last drive, all they're looking for is a field goal instead of a touchdown. But if you actually look at it, so those attempts would have been the first one would have been 54 yards. The second one would have been 55 yards. Mm-hmm. And Stefano, for as good as he's been throughout his career, he's actually only 1 for 4 career 50-plus yards. So, yeah, so and that was interesting. Granted, you know, last year he was dealing with injuries, so they're not going to give him a lot of opportunities to do that. And one of them was this year, and it was in the rain in Washington State. So, but in Mel's defense, that kick was short. So, I mean, he hit it down the middle, but it just fell short. So he didn't have enough distance on it. So, you know, not that I completely agree with it. I still kind of feel like, you know, he has the accuracy. You might as well try to get some points out of that, especially since our defense is notoriously inconsistent at getting stops. So I did just feel like that USC offense was going to break through here pretty quickly, but it, you know, something more to consider. I guess all I'm trying to say is it's not just a obvious Stefano should kick that for sure because he's money, you know, but something to think about for sure.
Yeah. I mean, without knowing that stat, I mean, hearing it now, okay, then maybe you don't. Maybe you just continue to punt, or you punt it when it's the 4th and 14 or whatever.
Yeah.
But
second one is inexcusable.
Yeah, if you're not comfortable with hitting that, go for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's not on Jay Johnson, which is, I think, kind of what you're alluding to. That's on
Milton. Right. You know,
he's got the final say in that. And I think we've said it multiple times before, he's not free of criticism. I mean, just because he's a first-year head coach. He's still new. It's still the first time he's been like a full-time head coach, and I think there's going to be growing pains with that. It's just kind of frustrating to see it when you have the game not won, but you really – I mean, you have a good chance of winning, and it's all really in your hands.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say the one thing with Jay Johnson on that last set of plays is I would have loved to see him run the ball on 3rd and 4, you know, hoping that you're playing for 4 downs and just make that a little bit closer. Because 4th and 4, I guess, is a little, you know, it's a little bit scarier than maybe 4th and 2 or 4th and 1 yard, especially with Montez under center. You know, I mean, we saw him quarterback sneak it for solid gains before. So that would have been nice to see. But yeah, I mean, if I'm Mel Tucker, I like my offense a lot more than I like my defense in that situation personally.
Definitely.
You know, you feel like you got to trust them, especially the way USC kind of worked us the drive before that to get within one score there. So it's a tough one. I think you're right. You know, first year head coach, there's going to be problems, but there were also a lot of good things that I think Mel was responsible for in this game. In particular, the fact that we were able to bounce back from 2 terrible games, one against a team that, I mean, Washington State is not that much better than us. There's no way. I refuse to believe that Washington State is 30 however many points better than us that they beat us by the other day. So I do think a lot of the team being able to rebound, play a much better team, I think, in USC with much more talent and battle in that one and really have the chance to win. I think a lot of that is credit to Mel. It's just frustrating that the game was lost, and part of it is a decision that I'm sure, you know, a lot of people are going to second guess, and hopefully he learns from it. We don't have the defense to punt inside the opponent's 40-yard line right now. Yeah. We just don't, straight up.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people say, well, if he would have gone for it on 4th and didn't get it, then people would still be crying foul. But I think the problem is, like you said, you got to trust your offense more than you trust this defense. They're not going to really stop anybody.
Right, so, yeah.
I think a lot more people would be less upset over the loss if he had gone for it and been a bit more aggressive in those kind of situations, because at least you are playing pretty much with what the statistics would say, which is that you're going to give up a touchdown.
Right. It would have been an easier decision to defend. And honestly, I mean, you know, maybe it gives the Buffs more time on the other side because they have USC has less of a field to march down. But you know, that was a tough one. And it did feel like with those USC receivers, it was kind of only a matter of time before they really started breaking out. I mean, they had been solid earlier in the game, but those last 2 drives, it really was just like, they were just better, you know? There was just not a lot you could do about it. I mean, poor KJ Trujillo, you know?
Well, yeah, poor him, but also he had one hell of a game, which was really cool to see from somebody who's I don't think they're physically ready to be playing yet, but they have to because there's just nobody else.
Yeah, no. I mean, hey, he was a baller, honestly. I was super happy with the way he played. He got the pick, he got a sack. I mean, he was all over the place. So that was fun to see for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and as a true freshman, that's really all you can ask for is if the ball comes your way, try and make a play, and he did it multiple times. So
yeah,
it's nice to have at least something bright coming out of this defense that's starting a lot of young guys. And not only him, but also Perry started to look a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I was going to say that,
Jalen Sommy's looking good. You know, Terrence Lang even looked a little good. But, you know, while I'm thinking of Terrence Lang, we still have zero pass rush pressure, and that's
why.
Yeah, I mean, that's why everyone is able to tear us apart, because they drop back to pass and they have 7, 8, 9 seconds before they have to do anything.
Yeah, I think Mustafa Johnson with the injury and I think it seems like it's still bothering him a bit. You know, I think he's kind of pushing himself to try and get back, or maybe a little earlier than being fully healthy. So I think that's hurting the pass rush for sure, because it's not like it was good at the beginning of the season, but it seemed better than what we've got going on right now. But, you know, to be honest, I did feel like Tyson Summers, who, you know, we both kind of criticized a bit on this podcast in the past, but I kind of got to say I liked what he was doing for a lot of the game with the defense. I mean, he knows that the pass rush has been bad, so he was trying to mix it up. I mean, he was sending corner blitzes. That's how KJ Trujillo got in there. He was doing a lot of showing a ton of pressure and then dropping back into coverage. He was doing a lot of showing a ton of pressure and bringing everyone and, you know, taking some risks, which I guess for me, I'm like, yeah, why not? You know, what do you have to lose? I mean, we've been getting torn up anyway. You might as well try to pull out some tricks, and it did work a couple of times. I mean, granted, you know, you needed KJ Trujillo to make a good play on an interception, and obviously they ended up giving up 35 points, but I felt pretty good about it still.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely looked better, because he really hasn't brought any different pressure pretty much for the entire first 7 games this year, so it was nice to see something a little different this time. Kind of frustrating it took him that long to figure it out.
Yes, for sure.
For him, I'm still kind of willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for 1 year, because we've just been completely ravaged by injuries, and I don't like using the injury 100%. Excuse, but it's let's see what he does if we have a full DB room for starters.
Yeah, with a year with the same system, hopefully for a lot of them, you know. I mean, you got to think there's going to be some improvements across the board. So I'm with you. Give him a year, you know, give him some time for some of his own guys to get in there, get our guys comfortable with the positions in the scheme, and see what happens.
Yeah. And that brings us to another point that's kind of been a big pain point the past few weeks, specifically 3-4 weeks, is we're still just, I mean, I don't know what they're doing in practice where they can't figure out why they're all far, like every single offensive lineman is false starting. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, penalties are a huge issue. I mean, I think the worst case was we had a couple of plays down by the goal line. We were like right outside of the end zone, and we were going to go to the LaVisca Wildcat, and they false started their way out of it. You know,
twice,
yeah. You can't do that. You can't have that happen. We got lucky because I do think we scored on that drive, thankfully, with a pretty well drawn up play, having KD go across. So, you know, I mean, it worked out in the end, but that kind of stuff is going to kill us for sure. And penalties overall, I mean, we had 13 penalties for 109 yards. That's like 3 straight weeks. Maybe even more, because Arizona, Oregon, I'm not exactly sure, but we've had just a ridiculous amount of penalties the last 4 weeks after being pretty disciplined in the beginning of the year. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, that still comes back to, I think, Tucker a lot. I mean, it's his team, so he's got to be able to take responsibility for that. But maybe a lot of it falls on Coach Cap specifically, because I think, I'm not looking at the exact numbers, but I would guess that a majority of the penalties we've had the last 4 weeks have been false starts, because somebody figured out that if the defensive line does move motion, which, I mean, pretty much all they're doing is they'll all somebody will call a move and everybody moves all at once, and somebody is reacting to that on the offensive line. And they, I don't know what they're doing in practice or what Cap is like telling them, but that's something that should, I mean, no one else is this bad with false starts.
Yeah, no, we're terrible with it. It's killer for sure.
Yeah, so we'll have to see if they can improve that. But I mean, if that one team figured out that we bite on that pretty much every time, and so they just, everyone's going to start do it until we can prove we can actually run a play without, you know, false starting.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, so you know, overall, I mean, I think it was, there were some good things to take away, but I hate the term, and I hate even looking at things as like a moral victory, just because that's all CU's had for the past 15 years.
Totally. I mean, look, we've talked about it a little bit already, but yeah, it's painful to take moral victories, especially in a game where real victory was so close. I mean, they really were so close to having this one, having their first win against USC ever. But, you know, I guess part of it is we're still talking about first-year head coach. I mean, the team should have won, but you've got to kind of take what you can. And I do feel like this game was good for them going forward. Obviously, a win would have been better, but just to show, okay, you still got it. You know, you're not a team that can only put up maximum 10 points in a game. So I'm glad that they figured that out, because they're going to have a couple of games coming up that honestly could be shootouts. I mean, the way Stanford's playing, UCLA, the way they are, and Washington, our only hope of beating them is by putting up a ton of points. So,
yep.
You know, they're going to need that offense to be clicking. So I'm glad that's back. But, you know, I'm with you. Moral victories kind of really suck. It kind of reminds me of the 2015 season for CU. I don't know if you've thought about this at all, but there were a few games in there where it was like we just couldn't get over the hump. Like I think they lost to Oregon State that year by 3 or something, and they lost to UCLA in overtime, and lost to USC by 4 or something. Like they had a bunch of games like that where they were close and just didn't quite get it. And obviously, it's a very different team from the one we have now in a different situation. But, you know, 2016 was a good year for them. So maybe it's a case of, you know, you lose close before you start winning those games.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, the entire team that was on 2016 is now either moved on, or, I mean, there's a couple guys left, like Montez and Tim Lenott, but you know, I think you still have to learn again how to win close games.
Right,
a lot of the guys on this team haven't really learned that yet. And I think that that's something that can come with stuff like this. I mean, they can figure out what they did wrong, and the coaches can figure out what they did wrong. Because, I mean, even though Jay Johnson is the most experienced offensive coordinator we've had since like 2006, he's still not that experienced at calling plays. You know, he's only done it for two other teams, and it wasn't for like a long period of time for either one. So, you know, it's just live and learn, I guess. But man, I'm really just waiting for them to actually win a game that they shouldn't.
I know. I want it so bad, but we'll see, man. They're gonna have some opportunities. They're not gonna be favored in any game for the rest of the year. So technically, any win they can get is gonna be an upset. And I think there are a few potentially on the table there.
Yeah, and you actually kind of brought it up a little bit. You know, just like kind of looking at the rest of the season. CU definitely has a shot against UCLA and against Stanford.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, I still kind of think that Utah's a no-hoper.
Yeah, that they're going to get wrecked in that one, I think.
Right. And especially because, you know, that defensive line is just completely nasty. And as good as the offensive line has been compared to last year, they're still not going to be able to do really anything against the Utah defensive line like that, I don't think.
No, that's serious NFL talent over there. So.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Washington is an interesting one, because Washington really hasn't looked like the Washington that Chris Peterson has usually got over there or up there. And, I mean, they're doing well, but they've still lost, what is it? Have they lost 2 or 3 games now?
They've lost 3. Cal, Oregon, and Stanford.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like if Stanford can beat Washington,
right? Yeah,
CU has a chance.
They smoked them, so you never know.
Yeah. So I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, if they can finish this season at 5-7 by winning UCLA and Stanford, we kind of talked about it a couple weeks back. You know, it's not ideal, but considering what happened the last 2 weeks before this week, that would be a pretty solid finish.
Yeah, and you know, for me, Buffs, just for us, for me, for Brett, for everyone out there who's just really struggled as a Buffs fan for years now, let's just win these next two, and let's make Washington a relatively interesting game. We're 5-5, you know, you've got a chance to do something great, even if they lose the next two after that. Let's make it interesting, you know?
Yeah, that would be fantastic to make it interesting. And who knows, maybe if Utah stumbles or something, they come in like and they lost a chance at the Pac-12 championship and then they pit. I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, and let me just say, beating UCLA and beating Stanford is by no means a gimme at all.
No.
I mean,
no.
Those games are probably going to be close, as much as I don't want them to be and as much as I didn't think they would be early on. I just think that's the reality of this team because of the way our defense is and because of the way our offense is. You know, we're going to be in close games for good, yeah, or for bad. So,
yep. So, you know, that brings us to kind of our preview of the UCLA game. And who are some guys you're kind of looking out for on that team besides, even though I don't think either of us think he's very good, DTR, it's obviously, I mean, you got to watch out for a guy that's athletic, but he could be hurt, like you said.
Yeah. So Dorian Thompson-Robinson is an interesting thing. I mean, I don't think we'll see the same one who played this last weekend, like we talked about, because of the leg injury. I mean, really, their offense, like, if you look at it, there's not a lot of guys that seem super frightening. Their running back, Kelly, has been solid. I would say he's like the main one I would worry about on offense because he's had some really big games. But like I said, I feel like a lot of that is based on Dorian Thompson-Robinson's ability to run because they do so much out of read option plays. So right, it'll be interesting to see, and I hope they can kind of keep a handle on him.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, I mean, Joshua Kelly is really the main pain point of their offense. He's the guy that we got to look out for. But without looking up how CU's ranked as far as the run defense goes, I mean, the run defense hasn't been too terrible this year. It's really all just the passing the passing defense and the linebackers and coverage.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in terms of weaknesses, the run game is like definitely lower on our list of worries.
Yeah, so it's kind of just going to be if we can stop, at least slow down Joshua Kelly and that UCLA running attack. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is not accurate enough to really take advantage of that. I mean, he's going to miss throws. It's just who he is as a quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess, I don't know. He doesn't scare me very much, but, you know, I just think this defense, unfortunately, has the ability to make anybody look good. So hopefully they can kind of keep improving, keep working with what good was coming from the last game. I mean, I gotta say, you know, USC scored 35 on us, and I think their offense is a lot better than UCLA. So if we can keep them under 30, it'd be the first time all year. So you never know.
Yeah, that was one thing I actually wanted to mention while we were still going through the USC game. I completely forgot it, but yeah, it'd be nice if we could hold one team to under 30.
Yeah, just one. You know, give me something.
There can't be more than like four other teams doing that right now.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And it's all just, it's weird, man. Especially since USC probably doesn't get over 30 if we play the clock right there towards the end of the game. So, I don't know. I know it's tough. I hope they figure it out one of these games here. This would be a great one. If they could figure out how to keep other teams off the board with these, like, with touchdown drives. I mean, even if they just can hold some teams to field goals, you know, I think we could have like a really solid game here.
Yeah, I think we definitely can too. And the one thing that matters really is if the offense can continue to do what it did against USC, because if it can't, then it's just going to be another ugly game that we don't want to watch.
Yeah, I think we'll know pretty much right away. We will both be there for this one, so that's exciting. I'm excited for that. I think we'll probably know pretty quick based on how the play calling looks and how Montez looks pretty much. I hope what I'm really, really hoping for is we get there and you see Montez running the ball aggressively again, opening up some more passes, feeding LaVisca Chenault in this game just like they did in the last one because he was killing USC. They just could not guard him. And, you know, I hope that they look similar to how they looked last week. I hope they just finish the job this time.
Yeah. And that kind of leads to the next point is can they bounce back? I mean, obviously they bounced back from two beatdowns. You know, they gave up, they lost by, what, 42 to you or Oregon and 31 to Washington State. But do you think it's almost more difficult for them to bounce back after losing one as tough as that?
You know, past teams, I would have said yes. But I kind of feel like Mel Tucker's kind of going to keep him in it. You know, I don't know why I have that faith considering what we've seen earlier in the year, but I think that they're going to have that ability. I mean, you know, they rebounded after worse loss than this with Air Force, with where they lost a game that they should have won going in, and they came back and beat ASU in Tempe. So, you know, I think they have that ability, and I think they should. And really, I feel like you just got to think, especially for the defense, you know, no one that you're going to see on the other side is going to be as good as those receivers that you saw from USC. And really, I don't think their quarterback is going to be as good as Keaton Slovis, which is crazy because he's a backup for USC. But I just think that's the reality of it.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I actually saw somebody point this out, and it could very well be extremely correct, is KJ Trujillo and Mark Perry, young guys starting, you know, they're basically playing full, like, starter minutes almost at this point. KJ Trujillo definitely is.
Definitely. But,
you know, they probably won't see a receiving core that talented ever again in their entire college career.
Yeah, I mean, even, like, especially Trujillo, he got beat on a touchdown from Vaughns that was just, like, the most perfect throw and catch combination ever. I don't, especially with his size, there was nothing he could do to stop it. And he made a pretty good play on the ball, but it was just a perfect, like, back shoulder throw, toe-tapping reception into the end zone, so... Yeah, I can't see anyone on UCLA being able to do that to him. So hopefully he comes in with some confidence after the way he played in their last game.
Yeah, that would be huge if he can come in. And then if everybody can just kind of, I mean, just like we said, hold one team under 30 points.
Under 30.
That would be huge.
That's it. That's all we're asking. Under 30 points. It's not that 29. Crazy.
I don't care.
Seriously.
29, but just do something.
Yeah.
Because you can't give up 30 points. If we give up 30 points in 12 games, I would not be surprised. That's like, if that's not like a NCAA record.
Yeah, I know. It's horrific. I mean, we got to stop it. We have to. And I think if they do hold UCLA under 30, I think they win this game. Really? I think.
I definitely think so too.
That's probably the deciding factor. Cause I think our offense should be able to do that against this UCLA defense. So, I mean, considering ASU, you know, they weren't in that game really at all, but they still managed to put up 21 points in like the last 7 minutes. So it'll be interesting. I think they definitely have a chance at this one. And if the defense was able to hold a team under 30 points, which is not that much to ask, and I wish it wasn't that much to ask of our defense, I do think they've got a win here. And you know what? They'll have the extra power of Brett and Chase screaming in favor
in person of
CU in person. So let's, you know, get that win for us. Let's see a win.
That'd be huge. And one thing before we get on to the next segment is I did want to mention somebody for Buffs fans to keep an eye out on the UCLA side is Devin Asiasi. I hope I'm not butchering his last name, but he's just a UCLA tight end. And his stats, you know, they aren't really as explosive as you'd expect, but the reason I want to point him out is because he is exactly the kind of person that can dominate Nate Landman or an Akil Jones in coverage or Carson Wells.
True.
And so I mean, look to I would not be surprised to see UCLA try and look to get him really involved really early. So hopefully, I'm sure Mel Tucker's looking to try and figure out how we can stop that, but they haven't been successful so far. But just want to throw that little bit in there to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, could be a big game for Mark Perry, you know. Hopefully he can keep improving. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So, Chase, let's hear your predictions for the game.
Oh, boy. Okay. I'm going to say that the Buffs are going to win this one, and I think that they're going to hold them under 30. Most of that is because I don't think Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to be playing, and if he is, he's not going to be the same. So, I said 35-28 Buffs.
Okay, 35-28 Buffs.
I think they're going to get 35 on the board. I don't think they'll get more, because that's just kind of how their offense works right now, especially with the defense the way it is. They don't exactly get a ton of opportunities. But I do think that the defense is going to have a better showing today, because I don't think that UCLA offense is going to be whole, and I don't think that it's going to be the same for them.
Okay, I like it. I like the confidence that they're going to hold them under 30.
I'm going with it this time because I just need it. I'm going to be there, and I just can't bear to watch them give up more than 30 points to the backup quarterback for UCLA. So let's not do that.
I like it. I wish I had the same confidence in the defense, but for the first time in like 4 weeks, I'm going to pick the Buffs to win as well.
Hey.
But no, I don't see him holding under 30. 38-31 Buffs.
Look, a guy could dream, okay?
I love that you have the confidence. I just don't see it happening, but I'll take 38-31 Buffs any day, even if they score over 30.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Give me a win. I don't even care how it happens. I don't care if it's 55-50. I'll take it.
I don't care if it's like how Kansas won last week. Did you see the ending of that game?
I did not.
Oh,
Are you talking about the block field goal?
That then
got fumbled and then re-kicked.
Oh God, that was such a Les Miles way to win a football game. It was amazing.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, so go check that out if you didn't see it. Basically what happened, Kansas tried to kick a field goal. It was blocked. Somebody from, now I'm forgetting who they even played. They picked up the ball, and the guy that was running the ball back, he assumed that was going to be the last play of the game, so he tried to lateral to somebody to pitch it back, and it just went, it was a terrible pitch, and Kansas ended up recovering and kicking to win the game. It was hilarious. You got to go watch it.
It was Texas Tech, for the record.
Texas Tech, that's who it was. Oh, man, that was amazing to watch. But on to our bets of the week, and hopefully y'all have been following Chase's advice more than mine, because I have been on a horrible streak the past couple days. My bookie account is feeling it, so hopefully you're not listening to me too much.
Oh, man. You know, I've had some good weeks. I think I was 2-1 last week after ASU totally struggled out of nowhere. I was not ready for that one. But you know what? We're going 3-0 this week, Brett. Both of us. We're going 3-0. I like it. Yep. So with that in mind, my bets. First one is Florida plus, I believe they're at plus 6 now. So versus Georgia. They are at home. I don't think Georgia has really shown anything that says that they're actually as good as anyone thinks. So in my mind, I'm thinking they're definitely not 9 points better they're definitely not that much better than Florida. So I think their defense is going to make it hard for Georgia to move the ball, and I think their offense is going to do enough to get that win, or at the very least keep it close. But I actually do think Florida could win this game outright. So that's my first one. My second one is Baylor minus 18 versus West Virginia. Those of you who don't follow the Big 12, West Virginia is very, very bad, and Baylor is ranked in the AP Top 25 and undefeated right now. So they're playing with a lot of confidence. I checked their schedule. They don't have a game to look ahead to right now, so I'm not worried about them falling asleep, and I think they win that game big, no problem. So that's my number two pick. And then my last pick, with all this confidence that I have, is CU. Right now, I got it at plus 6. I believe they could even be higher than that now. I'm not 100% sure, but versus UCLA. Like I said before, I think UCLA, Dorian Thompson-Robinson will not be the same guy. So I think that's going to hurt their offense a lot. And I just think our offense is, they're back. They're back, baby. And they're going to score a lot of points, and they're going to keep that within a touchdown for sure.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it seems like some sharp money must have come in on the CU game, because that line moved pretty quick from, what, 4.5 to 6.5. So
yeah, it moved quick.
Yeah, so something must have happened to make it move. But I actually had the same thing with the Georgia-Florida game. I think Florida's going to be able to win that one outright. Georgia just, something seems off about them, and I can't really put my finger on it, but something seems off. So I like the Florida pick. But my three were Arizona going to Corvallis to take on the Oregon State Beavers. They're favored by 5.5 points. And I guess I'm just kind of confused why Vegas is only giving Arizona 5.5 when, I mean, Oregon State won one Pac-12 game, kind of convincingly against UCLA, but then they got smacked by Utah. I don't see it. I mean, I think they're making progress, but I don't think they're within a touchdown of Arizona. I just don't see that happening. So I got Arizona taking that one. The next one I've got is Oregon -5 against USC. And, you know, now I'm kind of rethinking it now as I'm looking at it, because Oregon, I think, is due for a trip up. But I still think that if they come to play, USC is still coached by Clay Helton. And that's always a big negative whenever you're talking about pulling against the spread. So it is in South Carolina, but South California, Southern California. I can't.
There you go. Right. There you go.
Thank you. Chase being a California kid is probably pissed that I even said that. But Oregon, I think, will take that one if they want. I mean, they've got something to play for here with the playoff in mind, so I don't expect them to come out slacking or anything. And then the last one I got is Michigan -19.5 over Maryland. I mean, Maryland's just god awful, and Michigan seems to have somehow figured out how to play offense. So let's look for Michigan to win that one pretty handily. Maryland's pretty terrible, so I'm not too worried about that one. But I've been saying that for the past couple of weeks, and it hasn't worked out.
It's gonna work this time. I can feel it.
6-0 combined. We're doing it.
We got it. We got it.
Yep. So that covers up bets of the week. For the tweet of the week, we actually had we didn't have anything really that funny, but we thought this was a really interesting stat that came up from the Reddit college football account, which we've talked about on here before. They said Ohio State currently has 3 of the 6 most likely Heisman winners, according to Vegas, in Chase Young, Justin Fields, and J.K. Dobbins, which is pretty impressive. I mean, I think it just shows how dominant Ohio State's been pretty much all year.
Oh, yeah. Ohio State's a wagon, people. And, I mean, I talked about it a little bit last week when I was making my bet for them versus Wisconsin, and boy, did that one pay out. So, look, they're a really, really, really good team, and it's pretty incredible what they have over there. And, I mean, Chase Young is, like, one of the craziest guys I've ever seen on a football field. He's just dominating people. And he did it to Wisconsin, who honestly is a good team with a good offensive line. He just made them look real bad.
Yeah. I mean, if he can do that against Wisconsin's offensive line, he's going to be able to do the same thing against LSU or Alabama or whoever he goes up against in the college playoff.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that'll pretty much do it for this week's episode. Hopefully, when we come back next week, we finally got another victory to talk about. As always, if you want to ask any questions or just get some comments on something, just hit us up at shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com. And thank you for listening.
Yeah. Subscribe, leave those 5-star ratings, please. And yeah, leave some comments. We like to see them. So thanks for listening, and Sko Buffs, as always.
Sko Buffs.